from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Ray Suarez, in today for Michael Krasny. It sounds like a Hollywood thriller. Noel Field was a Harvard graduate and rising star in the State Department of the 1930s. He was also a Russian spy. In her new book, True Believer, Stalin's Last American Spy, journalist Kati Marton examines how Moscow seduced and later betrayed the idealistic young Field. She joins us to talk about Field's dramatic story at a time when U.S.-Russia relations and espionage are dominating the headlines again. Forum is next after this. Welcome to Forum on KQED. I'm Ray Suarez, sitting in this week for Michael Krasny. Almost 100 years ago, many idealistic Americans found themselves at a crossroad. The United States had become a world power and a much richer country. But a president who campaigned saying he wouldn't take the country into World War I had done it anyway. There was rising resentment of immigrants who were accused of bringing anti-American ideas with them through Ellis Island. And before long, American capitalism, already creating new extremes of wealth and inequality, would have its nervous breakdown and plunge the country into a sustained economic crisis. In Europe, the Russian Revolution toppled the monarchy, pulled Russia out of the World War, and embarked on a struggle to spread its new governing model across the world. And some Americans thought the Soviet Union was right. Many suffered here at home for their political beliefs. Others secretly worked to undermine the U.S. from within. Today, we'll look at one man in particular, Noel Field, a Quaker, a Harvard man, an American idealist dismayed by what he saw at home, who was cultivated and recruited by Moscow, and spent the next half century in thrall to a system and set of ideas from a government that cruelly used him, imprisoned him, and tortured him. Journalist and author Kati Marton tells Field's story in True Believer, Stalin's Last American Spy. Kati Marton, welcome to Forum.
Thank you, Ray. I'm delighted to be with you. Thanks for having me.
How did Noel Field end up in your inbox? Was he always there?
Well, not really. It was really a remarkable piece of good luck that others hadn't found him in their inbox, because I think it's one of the most astonishing chapters of the Cold War, missing chapter, that an American played such a huge role in Stalin's torture and assertion of power and influence. An American who really was bred for a big success story in his own country. And the way I came to the story was a rather bizarre personal connection. As you may know, my parents were journalists in Hungary, which is where I grew up, who were jailed by Stalin for reporting the truth. They were the last independent journalists. And for a while, my father shared the same cell as Noel Field, and in fact had the same interrogator. And many years later, when I was searching around for my next book, I was reading Arthur Schlesinger's memoir, in which Noel Field's name comes up as somebody who Schlesinger, who was in the OSS during the war. Schlesinger was one of the very few Americans who really picked Field to be what he was, which was a traitor to his own country, and refused Wild Bill Donovan's order to work with Field. And then so a light bulb went off. Is this the same Noel Field that back in my early childhood my father had spoken of, and you know, this mysterious character in a Budapest maximum security prison along with my parents? And so I started researching. Indeed it was. I found surviving family members who have been wonderfully generous in helping me to flesh out the man, and in fact, they themselves were interested in finding out what happened to this strange man, whose whose life ended behind the Iron Curtain, and that their own parents never talked about. And so I had full cooperation from the family, and I knew my way around both the KGB archives and the Hungarian secret police archives from prior work, and found remarkable and horrifying testimony to Stalin's cruelty to his own most slavish acolytes. I mean, we know how cruel a man Stalin was by now, but this is an instance of his cruelty to his own people.
Noel Field, and you use the phrase strange man. People who haven't read the book yet don't know the half of it. But here's a guy who has been groomed to Zoom by the American
right.
system, finishes
right.
Harvard in 2 years, is well thought of by his contemporaries, moves nearly effortlessly into the Foreign Service and the State Department, speaks
right.
several languages, a cultivated fella, but also kind of an odd duck.
Yes.
And again in your story, one of the most amazing parts of it is that he's sort of hiding in plain sight.
Exactly.
He doesn't take great pains to cover up who he is, what he believes, where his sympathies lie. Mm-hmm. And yet, like a pill that's been made too mm-hmm. hard to dissolve, he just sort of passes through the system with nobody saying, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Let's take a
yeah.
second look at this Noel Field guy.
You know, Ray, the show, the cable show, The Americans, the guys who make that show have been extremely supportive of this book, and in fact, they've told me that True Believer has really unlocked a lot of their own questions about how it is that people can be so completely captured by a murderous ideology at an early age, and then held for life. And that's what this is. And when I was writing it, I didn't imagine that it would become such a newsworthy subject. I kept thinking that the parallels, the news peg, would be ISIS recruiting alienated Americans online. But in fact, now we're learning every day that Moscow continues to try to manipulate American policy from within. And this is an instance where you had a guy who was talent scouted. You had this man, you described him brilliantly, the most unlikely spy, really. He was well-bred, well-spoken, and, you know, extremely polished, waspy Harvard guy. And that's precisely what made him such an ideal recruit. And he was talent spotted by Moscow's agents in Washington, who made a special trip to begin the seduction, a very gentle seduction, and who then for 35 years betrayed his country, and people just were shocked when he was unmasked on the front page of the New York Times. So it's kind of a cautionary tale about spies don't necessarily, you know, wear trench coats and look skulk around corridors, and the best ones, and I would put Alger Hiss, a very famous American spy, who was Noel Field's very close friend, and was also in the State Department. These guys were insiders. They were establishment characters, just as, by the way, the Cambridge Five during a similar time in British espionage history, Kim Philby and Anthony Blunt and the others, they too were of Oxford, Cambridge, Eton, etc. So Moscow was very shrewd in picking people who could pass, quote unquote.
But again and again, Noel Field comes across men who are hard men, ruthless, in fact, working across the globe and ready to mercilessly wipe out people who are inconvenient, a problem, their adversaries. Mm. Noel Field isn't that guy. He isn't involved in the the sort of ugly black side of this world that exists between the wars and then into the beginning of the Cold War, is he?
No, he starts off, and this is the tragic, this is also a human tragedy. I think it was Voltaire who said that if you can persuade people of an of absurdities, you can persuade them to commit atrocities. And that's what happened with Noel Field, who indeed started off as a do-gooder, an idealist, as you said, a Quaker, who wanted to improve the world, who'd been shaken to his core when his father, also a very prominent Quaker, took him to the still fresh battlefields of World War I at Verdun and Marne and so on, and saw this, you know, endless vista of fresh graves. And the father said to the young Noel Field, do something to prevent the next one. And that became his mission in life. So he starts off as a really good guy. He hates the racism that he observes on his daily walk from his apartment to the State Department. And the only blacks he sees are those serving lunch to the Secretary of State. He befriends blacks, all of which doesn't help his career, but he does it out of conviction. But slowly he's so alienated from his own country and doesn't realize that he's being absolutely manipulated by people who do not have his country's interest or his in their sights. And he is such a needy guy, you know, looking for a faith, looking for a family, looking for comrades because he feels alienated. And the alienation begins during the Sacco and Vanzetti trial, which he was still at Harvard when these two Italian immigrants were convicted of murder in a kangaroo court trial and sent to the electric chair. And what Noel Field and other American intellectuals, idealists, didn't realize was that the Moscow's brilliant spinmeister, really the guy who invented ideological spin, a guy named Willy Munzenberg, was spinning gold out of this trial. And all over the world, there were Sacco and Vanzetti committees set up by Moscow and protests against American embassies were organized, all of this manipulated. And of course, these young idealists and you know others among them were people like Dorothy Parker. It's hard to think of her as a young idealist, but she was once upon a time. George Orwell, Arthur Kessler, John Dos Passos, all of them, you know, well-meaning, right-thinking people who were caught up in Edmund Wilson, who were caught up in this anti-capitalist, anti-Washington fever. And by the way, there was cause aplenty, as there is today, frankly, to be distressed by our own country's behavior. There were 11 million unemployed then. And this was, by the way, before FDR and his, you know, jaunty optimism rode into town and really averted a pre-revolutionary situation by pushing through real reforms. But by then, these guys and my guy Noel Field had been captured by this toxic ideology, but none as deeply captured as Noel Field, who never let go and never acknowledged that he'd made a series of really terrible choices in his life, sacrificed, you know, starting with his own family. But
if you're just joining us, we're talking about the life of a spy for Soviet Russia named Noel Field, who was seduced and later betrayed by Moscow. Journalist Kati Marton wrote a book documenting his life called True Believer: Stalin's Last American Spy, and she joins us for the hour. Our number, if you want to join the conversation, 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. In the interwar period, Kati, weren't there respectable corners of American opinion that underestimated the Soviet Union, underestimated its threat, its willingness to extend its influence beyond the borders of the country to other parts of the world.
Absolutely. And ironically, Ray, the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover totally underestimated them, which is one reason, in my view, that when Hoover started his witch hunt, and it was a witch hunt under the McCarthy era, they sort of doubled their zeal was to compensate for their underestimation of Soviet penetration of really the highest reaches of U.S. government. I mean, the White House, the State Department, Treasury, the Department of Agriculture was a hotbed of communist infiltration. But this – we're talking about the 30s. And when Hoover – J. Edgar Hoover – was presented with a list of Communist Party members in the State Department, and Noel Field was on that list. He kind of shrugged it off and said, "We're in an anti-fascist war here, and we're not interested in these amateurs." And same with President Roosevelt, who in 1938 was given this list, and who also said, "Don't divert me with this stuff. We gotta go after Hitler. We can't be diverted." And so these guys got away with a lot in the 30s, and it was the irony is that by the time the actual witch hunt began in the 50s, there were no witches left. But so when Nixon and Joe McCarthy unleashed their investigations, it was after the fact. But we came very close in the 30s to having a different kind of government. I mean, these guys, Noel Field among them, they were not recruited merely to gather intelligence. They were positioned for when the revolution came, and they were convinced that there would be a revolution because there was such dissatisfaction with capitalism seemed to have failed. With the whole order of things, they were placed to take over come the day.
So let's talk about some of the things that they actually did. We've been talking so far about people squirreled away in government departments who had been cultivated, trained, become assets. What kind of things were they doing? There was Noel Field. Part of international commissions to various conferences, trusted by his State Department peers to do sensitive work. Yep. So he was doing Moscow's bidding. What did that involve?
Well, he was a reluctant spy at the outset. He wouldn't give he wouldn't steal documents. He would only give oral reports. But then bit by bit, and he had an extremely skilled liaison of an former Viennese actress, a woman out of a Raymond Carver novel, who really knew what she was doing, and she persuaded him bit by bit to steal documents. And the State Department in those days was a pretty sloppy security operation. You know, the Secretary of State had just announced that gentlemen don't read each other's mail. So that's the kind of innocence that prevailed. And so it didn't take Sherlock Holmes to spirit documents out. So Noel started not only stealing documents, which he gave to this woman Hetty Massing, but he started writing profiles of his coworkers and forming friendships with other. With other of Moscow's spies, notably Alger Hiss, who, by the way, I know there are people still in, around who are skeptical as to whether Alger Hiss was a spy. I think when they read my book, they will come away without a shred of doubt about Hiss's betrayal.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because that was one of the big controversies of the end stages of the Cold War. And we even got into national arguments sort of relitigating the Chambers-Hiss rivalry. What convinced you, what do you present that sort of makes it a slam dunk for you?
Well, you know, for a long time, the fact that Hiss was Nixon's target gave him an aura of innocence because so many right-thinking people found Nixon odious, and his sidekick Joe McCarthy and Roy Cohn equally so. So that gave Hiss some cover, and Hiss was a spectacular performer too. I mean, he could lie absolutely seamlessly, something that Noel Field could not, which is one of the reasons, just to jump ahead a bit, one of the reasons that Noel Field was on the run, because he was from an FBI subpoena when he was unmasked by Whitaker Chambers in the Whitaker Chambers Alger Hiss showdown under the bright lights of the House Un-American Activities Committee. It was Chambers who unmasked Hiss and Field. Hiss stayed because he knew he could outmaneuver his accusers. Hiss did, in fact, serve time for perjury because the statute of limitations on espionage had expired by then. But at any rate, what persuaded me of Hiss's guilt is manifold. One, he was working for the Soviet military intelligence. My guy, Field, was working for the KGB, the predecessor of the KGB, the NKVD. Because these were siloed intelligence organizations, they didn't know who was working for whom precisely, and so they slipped up in the archives. I found documents in the KGB archives which name Alger Hiss fully
and use, instead of a code name, his name, Alger Hiss. I'm going to stop you right there, and we'll come back after the break. We'll continue our conversation about a Russian spy from the 1940s named Noel Field. He's the subject of a new book called True Believer, Stalin's Last American Spy, by journalist and author Kati Marton. What questions do you have for our guest? Call us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Ray Suarez in for Michael Krasny. You're listening to KQED Public Radio. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Ray Suarez in today for Michael Krasny. We're talking about a Russian spy from the 1940s named Noel Field. He's the subject of a new book called True Believer, Stalin's Last American Spy, by journalist and author Kati Marton. If you have questions about Field's life as a spy, what the atmosphere was like at that time when Field defected to Moscow's side, or even how it relates to today's tensions over Russian hacking, please give us a call at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Kati Marton, the Russians, the Soviets at the time, used Noel Field pretty harshly.
Yes.
They tortured him. They imprisoned him. Mm-hmm. He was caught in the competing, changing directions out of Moscow, and yet he never broke, even in the face of the post-Khrushchev revelations about what was going on under Stalin's rule. Was he just peculiarly naive?
I think it was a combination of neediness. He had so totally embraced the cause. You know, it was his religion. It was what made sense of his life. It was the overwhelming architecture of his life. And since he had betrayed his own family, because his family didn't know that he was a spy, well, his wife did. His wife followed him. One of the people I interviewed said she would have followed him to into the Nazi party or into Buddhism. She was so devoted. And she, too, was rewarded for her loyalty with jail, because what happened was that when he was unmasked, Field by Whitaker Chambers, he fled to Prague and fell right into a Stalin concocted trap. Because you know the old saying, when elephants fight, the grass gets trampled. Well, Stalin was waging a war against Tito, his only real rival in the newly established Soviet bloc, and Tito was way too independent, and so Stalin was looking to replay the formula that had worked so well to eliminate his rivals in the 30s, which is a bunch of show trials, which are kind of like ISIS beheadings. They're meant to instill terror, nothing to do with justice or actual guilt. No, not at all. Anyway, so Stalin orders up show trials in all the satellite countries, and needs a witness for the prosecution. And who better than this American, Noel Field, who will under torture connect all the people that Stalin wants to get rid of, so-called Titoists, to the U.S. because Tito is now portrayed as a traitor and as a running dog of the imperialists and of Washington and of Eisenhower and Dulles, etc. We're now in the late 40s, early 50s, and so they need to kidnap Noel Field to confess to being the arch spy, and so they lure him to Prague. My book opens with you know his terrible kidnapping from his hotel in Prague, and by the way he never reappeared from the East after that kidnapping in the late 40s, and then his wife follows him looking for him, and then his brother follows him looking for the couple, now disappeared American couple, and then his daughter follows him. So an entire American family disappears into Stalin's maw, and each of them in a different station of the Gulag archipelago. And Field and his wife, as I mentioned earlier in this bizarre coincidence, are in the same prison as my parents and have the same interrogator. And that, by the way, is another reason why I know of Alger Hiss's absolute guilt, because my father learned it from his interrogator. So that's another thing that strengthens my version. But you know, Ray, I sometimes felt that I was writing a history not of one spy and his human tragedy, but indeed of the 20th century, because this guy had a Zelig, Noel Field had a Zelig-like gift for being at all the wrong places at the wrong time, the key events. The Spanish Civil War plays a huge role in this saga because it was in Spain that Noel Field, who was – by now he's left the State Department and he's working for the League of Nations, a fairly lame organization without American membership. But he's there and he meets all the future big communist leaders. And as you know, Spain was the first chance that the West had to actually stop talking about fascism, the threat of fascism, and actually fight it, do something about it. And the U.S. was on the sidelines. And this was another reason why all these idealistic, basically left of center American intellectuals were so appalled at their own government. And again, a similarity to today, refugees start flooding Marseille, which is where Noel Field goes next after Spain, refugees from Hitler. And again, the U.S. does nothing. On the contrary, tightens its quotas against primarily Jewish refugees. And again, these Americans are so appalled and revolted by their own country, and what they know of Russia is strictly what they get from the Soviet propaganda spinmeisters. And the astonishment for me is that so many intelligent, well-educated Americans could betray their country for a country that they never even set foot in, that a country that was really more an idea than a reality.
866-733-6786 is our number. We'll start here in San Francisco with Julian. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. It's very fascinating and timely, as you mentioned. My question is, what does that initial seduction sound like? What does it look like functionally?
It wasn't quite a literal seduction, but they had done – Moscow's agents had done their homework before they approached Noel Field and knew precisely what buttons to push there and knew that he was basically motivated by high ideals, and so they fed that, even though – they themselves no longer believed that this was the utopia that was promised in Lenin and Marx's writings. So they fed that, and then they. By the way, no money ever was involved. The Field's betrayal was 100% out of conviction. And in fact, whenever he had any money, he gave it to the needy. So again, he's a confusing character because there are so many things about him that I admired. But he had this combination of alienation from his own country and a need for need to be part of something bigger than himself. And they played to that. Here is your chance to be a part of history. And another thing is the appeal of a secret life. To some people, that's very appealing. And because he was daily fooling his colleagues in the State Department, who thought, oh well, there goes old Noel. Just a kind of a. Airy intellectual, when in fact he was having the last laugh. I mean, until he wasn't.
Julian in San Francisco, thanks for your call. We'll go next to Chris in San Francisco. Welcome.
Oh, good morning. Thank you, and thank you very much for your book and fascinating conversation. I was born in 1946, and my grandparents were out of Kishinev and were imprisoned by the Bolsheviks in both Siberia and Tashkent, and eventually made it out. Long story, ended up in Canada and then the United States. And until their last day in the 80s, they were convinced that there were still very insidious and secret networks of spies and people looking and watching every move they made and listening to everything they said, that there were secret tunnels all the way back to the Soviet Union from the United States to to spirit dissenters and people back. What can you speak to all of that sort of that continuing paranoia even after they'd been in the West? Thank you.
Yes. Well, that's quite a history, and I fully understand it. I'm myself a product of the Cold War, as well as the Holocaust. So I know from my parents that even though we came here as refugees when I was a little kid in the late 50s, and you know, for me, America was an entirely peaceful and welcoming place. I don't think my parents ever shook their maybe they weren't quite as paranoid as your parents, but you know, having experienced those two 20th century nightmares, the Holocaust and then the Soviet dominion, they never really I think my mother was always prepared for flight. I think it's just soaked into to your system when if you've been through what they went through, and God forbid we should ever repeat history.
Chris, thanks a lot for your call. Neil is next in San Francisco. Neil, welcome.
Yeah, the director Constantine Costa-Gavras dedicated his movie The Confession to Noel Field. Do you have any idea what that was all about?
Yes, it's I've talked to Costa-Gavras, one of the truly great directors. He did Z, as you know, and The Confession is full of references to Noel Field. It's I refer to the show trials in which Field was the chief witness. The first one was in Budapest. That's the one that my parents covered as reporters. The next one was in Prague, and then the train moved on to Poland and East Germany. But the Prague show trial, the very famous Slansky trial, is the subject of The Confession, with one of my favorite actors, Yves Montand, playing the lead. And Noel Field is not in the film, but he's constantly referred to, and I urge you to see it. It is it's a wonderful rendering of the brutality and the terror of this period. And you know, we're so ahistoric as a country, because we've lived in relatively peaceful times. But I firmly believe that history is too important to be left to historians. And I think we all have to, especially given what the world is going through now, and it isn't only our country that's in a precarious political situation. It's Europe, too, from east to west. I think we really need to go back to the history books, and we could do worse than starting with True Believer.
Neil, thanks a lot for your call. Patricia writes to ask, it seems with all that's come to light recently, that Donald Trump could be under Russian control. And Carl asks, with your knowledge and experience, what's your intuition regarding our president-elect? Certainly, it's been an odd couple of weeks to have Republicans stepping forward to defend Russia, even see a candidate for vice president of the United States say that the Russian president is a better leader than the American president.
It's astonishing, Ray. What can I say that you don't already, and you and your listeners don't already feel, I believe? I mean, it is astonishing to have this kind of slavish admiration of this former KGB agent, Putin. I'm not advocating a return to the Cold War. I think that would be dumb. But Russia's interests and values have never coincided with our own. Russia has never been anything but our rival. I'm not using the word adversary, but it's a rivalry. And for a world power, you know, my husband, the late Richard Holbrooke, would be so appalled at the naivete, because Richard was a hard-nosed strategist and You know, he believed in diplomacy, but he did not believe in granting our enemies and our rivals the kind of a pass that Trump has granted Putin, advocating that he hack Hillary Clinton's emails, which you know, it's to say that it's a distressing situation as we inch up to the inaugural is an understatement. I'm not panicked, but I think we all have to be vigilant and we all have to lean in and not wait for the next election.
Well, knowing what you do about the history of the world in the last 60 years, are there markers? Are there style points as you look at this KGB-trained operative who in the post-Soviet world has risen to become the president of Russia that bear the markers of their MO?
Well, I mean, they're not so different from what I describe here. The Russians are always looking for an opportunity to best us, and they see themselves legitimately as a great power with a proud history, and we can't be dismissive of their world role. It's a huge and powerful country. But we can't retreat from the fray. We can't. I strongly feel that we did retreat in the last few years from the Middle East, for example, and Russia. Putin sees that as an opportunity to. They've always wanted a bigger role in the Middle East, and now they're there calling the shots. You know, backing Assad, which is a terrible outcome. So I think one of the first markers really is what people like Putin do against their own media. I work for an organization called the Committee to Protect Journalists, and we got a wonderful shout out from Meryl Streep at the Golden Globes, for which I thank her. And I make frequent or used to make frequent trips to Moscow to support our Russian colleagues, journalists, but there are very few independent journalists left there. The minute that Trump starts messing around with our free press, as he is apt to do, I think we really have to sit up and each of us has a platform. We need to be. I'm very proud. My children will be marching in the Million Woman March, including my son, who I'm hoping he's listening. Ray, my son Chris Jennings is a writer in the Bay Area. And he's flying to Washington to march, as is my daughter. And I would urge others to. I have an airtight excuse. It's the launch of the German edition of True Believer. So I have to be. And I was happy about that because I didn't want to be around for Trump's inaugural.
You know, Aurora writes, to take a little exception with what you've been saying, after the 1917 revolution, the Soviet Union was isolated and starved by Western powers, who went to great lengths to destroy the new country. In the 1930s, the Soviet Union was in the grips of severe economic and social crisis. Overthrowing the U.S. was not at the top of their agenda, and even if it was, they were absolutely incapable of acting on it. Meanwhile, the U.S. pursued its policy of manifest destiny, and its European allies controlled the rest of the world. How do you respond?
Well, Is there a question in there?
Well, they're just sort of counterposing that view of the abilities of the Soviet Union to really subvert governments in other parts of the world at that point.
Yes. Well, the Soviets don't quite have that power today, but they are a great power. We have to acknowledge and recognize that, and meet them head on, because we are not Luxembourg. We are a world power. We are, of course, in my view, more than about a mighty military. We are about an idea. And I think that the idea is now in jeopardy, the idea of America. As the final sanctuary for the world's most distressed, with that idea is now in real danger, because we are saying that we don't want immigrants, that we want to build a wall, that we want people to take religious tests before they are granted admission. All of these things are sending a terrible signal to the world and really weakening us. If we don't stand for those things, then we're just like, well, any other big power. Then we're just like Russia, in fact. We now have a president who doesn't seem to respect those ideals, and that's very alarming. And I think it's, I don't want to sound like my pants are on fire, but in a way, I think it's not business as usual, and Russia is watching, and Russia is not going to pass up an opportunity to weaken us. Look what they did to the Clinton campaign. We don't have to get into how imperfect that campaign was, but it's no question that Putin had a favorite in this race, and that favorite is moving into the White House.
Returning to Noel Field, a listener asks, was Field released from prison? What happened to him at the end of his life? Was he still a true believer?
Yes, such a good question. He was released. He was released several years after Stalin's death because his interrogator defected, and the CIA had a big news conference in Washington with the interrogator, who said the family are alive, because at that point it was a whole missing family. And so then the State Department starts bombarding Moscow demanding their release. The other members of the family, the daughter, who, by the way, Erica, who is the heroine of this tale, and thank God for Erica, because she's such a positive, wonderful character. Otherwise, I would have gone crazy just writing about Noel, the traitor. So Noel at that point asks for asylum in the same country that had jailed him, tortured him, namely Hungary. And one of the conditions of his release is that he never talked to Western media, because he's a broken man. He and his wife are obviously a shell of their former selves after what they went through. And the only Western press interview ever done of Mr. and Mrs. Field are done by my parents, who found them by chance during the chaos of the Hungarian Revolution and did this interview with them. And I was the beneficiary of their notes. So that too played a part in my reconstruction of the story. Noel Field became something of a hero of the Soviet Revolution, living in Hungary, and died there, given full military honors, and never saw his own never saw his daughter again, never saw his own country again, and to the last, he did not acknowledge that Stalinism was a terrible ideology. He never acknowledged his own part in sending hundreds of people to the gallows with his fake confession, nor in the destruction of his own family, because his brother, an eminent architect, also spent 5 years in a Polish dungeon. Erica, whom I referred to, was in the Arctic laying railroad tracks. Didn't see her little kids for 5 years, but all of them reconstructed their lives. The others in the U.S., but Noel Field stayed in a country that had so brutalized him. It's an astonishing story of
and wondered, it seemed, as if he had deserved it.
He felt that he did his role for the party. Very much like the character in Darkness at Noon, he felt that his last duty to the party, because the Communist Party can never be wrong in a true believer's lights. The party is always right. It's like the Catholic Church for true believing Catholics. He felt that his last duty to the party was to confess to being a CIA agent, which is what they wanted from him, because if he was a CIA agent, then all his friends could be tarred with the same brush in the party.
The book is called True Believer: Stalin's Last American Spy. Kadi Marton, great to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Ray. It was wonderful to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone who called and wrote in this hour. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Schoeffer-Wolf. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Holly Kernan. I'm Ray Suarez, in for Michael Krasny. Let's talk again. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.